You're listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental.
TMZ, oh my goodness.
I think he's the philosopher of football.
I'd like to have some more derbies.
Absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, I like it. I like it a lot.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory. We're trying to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
Ow, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental from the AT&T MLS Studios in Midtown Manhattan. I am Andrew Wiebe with
Broadway.
My pantomiming partners in soccer, Matt Doyle, David Goss, Bobby Warshaw. Oh, the Audi 2019 MLS Cup playoffs have begun. Join me. Join
I didn't know what we were doing.
No, it was a slow clap, and Dave. Yeah. It was awesome. Six great games, 2 of 5 match days down here in the postseason.
Are we calling all of them great?
Doyle, you would just off the rip.
You would just have to bring us down, wouldn't you? 27 goals, what a weekend it was. We will get into all of it. Start to finish, all 6 of the first round games, all 4 of the conference semifinals coming up on Wednesday and Thursday on FS1 and the ESPN family of networks. We will also, of course, talk about my new adopted home city, Sacramento. I'm going there.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going there. Just down the road in Vacaville, my newfound family lives.
Have you heard about the march they do?
It's probably awesome. And probably if I go to it, they're going to win games.
Probably.
I'm telling you that right now. They are the 29th team in Major League Soccer. They are coming in 2022, the Sacramento Republic. Bobby, I'm sorry, you had something to say.
No, I was going to say that's our typical Weeby the Narcissist.
Wow.
Somebody's been reading the comments.
Exactly. That was really mean, and I thought we were never going to bring that up here.
I came off well in that comment.
After the favor I did you yesterday, Bobby, that shall go completely unnamed, you do that to me? Messed up, man. That's completely messed up.
I just think we give a shout out to all the really nice commenters out there. Every once in a while, we should acknowledge we also see the not so nice
Correct.
Ones.
We get torn down and cry ourselves to sleep at night. It's okay. Evan Ream of the Davis Enterprise will fill us in on Sacramento, the city, the club, the future. So we'll get to that.
Oh, man, that guy Savage Taylor, our buddy Taylor from Total Soccer Show, too.
Really?
Uh-huh.
Same guy?
Yeah.
Wow. Stay off Reddit.
Better.
Focus, Doyle. Focus. Let's talk about the playoffs, man. And we're going to go back to front. So we're going to start with the games that ended the most recently.
They didn't mention me at all, which is
I just
worse.
I know. That was, yeah. That is
Weeby, at some point, I want to do a segment where Doyle ranks his favorite types of commenters between MLSsoccer.com, Reddit, Twitter, because I know you have that ranking somewhere in your head.
Mm-hmm.
Who's the best? Who are the best commenters?
Boy. Total Recall here. Really digging through the muck and the mire inside of your brain.
Why don't we go on to the playoffs and
sure.
I'll think about that for a little while.
We'll get there.
Minnesota, there's no commenters, are good.
Look, it was chalk. It was chalk all weekend. Top seeds, home teams, regular season matters. Yes, sir. The narrative was getting driven home until the final game of the weekend. Minnesota United at home. They say shh until Sebastian Legette said shh. And then Jonathan Dos Santos said, shh, and then Jan Gregus said, oh, hold on, but then it was 2-1.
This is why Cam can't sleep. This is Weeby
no, actually,
being quiet.
No, but see, that's how babies sleep. That is one of the motions that you say, shh, and that actually mimics inside.
It's a white noise machine
exactly.
Right now. Got
exactly.
It.
That's what I am. That's the definition of me on this show. The Loons just couldn't get it done. The Galaxy, even without Zlatan being very good, did get it done, and this was the only quote-unquote upset of the weekend. We are mostly going to cover the winning teams as we look ahead to the conference semifinals, which means we're going to look real closely at Adrian Heath's lineup decisions because he did not start Mason Toy, Angelo Rodriguez, in his place. Angelo Rodriguez has not scored a goal in Major League Soccer in 8 starts and some substitute appearances since, I believe, June 29th. It's since June 29th. Darwin Quintero, who did not start the U.S. Open Cup and is their quote-unquote, again, in quotes, biggest, most expensive, most important player, did not start. He came off the bench.
None of those are in quotes. None of those are just facts.
Okay, those are facts. Fine. What did we think about that? Did that cost Minnesota the game, or is it something different?
What I want to point out here is that one of the truisms from the history of Major League Soccer is that teams and managers have kowtowed to star players. often to the detriment of both the manager and the team. So when a manager makes a hard decision like this and puts supposedly the team first ahead of a star player, I will always applaud that. I will always give the boss credit for making the hard, unpopular decision. But when you look back at reasons for why this would have happened, and when you look at the way this game was played, it was not the right decision. Because there is a scenario, and I think that the Red Bulls in Champions League last year, remember we had the conversation about Kaku not starting. Red Bulls missed 21 chances, and people said Kaku should start. And Jesse Marsh said, we created 21 chances. We couldn't have done any more. But if you look at the way Minnesota United played, it came down purely to quality in the final third. It's not as if Angelo Rodriguez or Kevin Molino or Ethan Finley did anything magical to create chances in place of Darwin Quintero. They simply needed a star player to finish one of those off, and they needed Darwin Quintero on the field.
It could have been Rodriguez. He is a designated player, after all. Or it could have been Mason Toyer. Rodriguez whiffed on a ball across the box that you probably shouldn't whiff on if you're a professional soccer forward. He also missed a header very close in. A great run, a great leap, not a great header. Does Mason Toy finish those? I mean,
I don't know.
Are we living in this fantasy world if we try to go to that scenario?
I can't believe you guys are talking
Mason Toy. Yeah, I think Bobby's point is correct, which is the big question mark is Darwin Quintero. Toy had a good spell in the season. He hasn't been good lately. He's in his second year of professional soccer. The decision not to start him is less controversial or whatever you want to say. The one on Darwin Quintero is. The other one is Robin Lott has 0 goals and 0 assists in his MLS career. And he missed one from inside the six as well. So there's a world in which you can start Molino and Darwin Quintero or do something else different. So it was more than one decision for me in that attack that let his team down for Adrian Heath. And he said it kind of, we created chances. We just didn't have the finish. What are you going to do? Well, that's what you do.
I think there are two ways to look at it. And one way is the way that Bobby kind of spelled out, which is like Adrian Heath has done a good job of holding his DPs accountable this year, right? And like, we've seen throughout this, as Bobby said, we've seen throughout this league, DPs don't get benched. Well, Angelo Rodriguez played himself onto the bench this year. Mason Toy took his chance and was really good for a month and a half and then was really bad, and he played himself out of the lineup. So like, what else is Adrian Heath going to do right there? And then Darwin Quintero, it's all about those turnovers. And we saw it in this game. It was his turnover that led to the Jonathan Dos Santos goal. So I think Adrian Heath deserves the benefit of the doubt here because these guys have been mistake prone. They have been profligate in front of net. They have not gotten it done. And like, you have to bench players like that regardless of who they are. At the same time, if you're going to be a team that ever does something in the playoffs, the coach has to be able to get the best out of your DPs. It's a Bruce Arena line. Like, if you want to win in the playoffs, your best players have to be your best players. And for this entire second half of the season, Minnesota's best players were not. They just weren't. And, like, I think that overall, Adrian Heath ended up doing a good job this year. But like, they have to figure that out for next year, and I don't think they'll be figuring it out with Angelo Rodriguez and Darwin Quintero on the roster.
Matt, the general concern with Darwin Quintero is that he in some way not just helps you create chances, but makes you more likely to give up goals when he's on the field because of the turnovers, because of his lack of defensive responsibility. A data point for that. The last 14 games that Minnesota United started with Darwin Quintero in the first 11, and none of them did they give up more than one goal. In none of the last 14 games that Darwin Quintero started, did they concede more than one goal? So I ask again, what exactly is the concern with having him on the field?
Is that then it's more about for Adrian Heath, like, just cover up for Darwin? I know you don't want to always do that with star players, and it might be annoying and frustrating, but it's just like nobody on your team can do what Darwin can do in that single moment, and it is a single moment that you need in the playoffs. So do whatever it is that you have to do to just cover up. Like, get all the water carriers in there. Like, tell everybody else to run. Set up something that allows Darwin Quintero to do whatever the hell he wants, whether it be turn the ball over in bad spots, but you have numbers behind him, or get out in the open field and did what he did last year. I mean, I watched this game and you're just thinking, who is the difference maker going to be? You hope it's going to be Kevin Molino, but Kevin Molino has been that in just start. Yeah. One game you're thinking, God, this is back to Orlando City USL MVP Kevin Molino, first year in MLS Kevin Molino, and it just never has happened. But maybe it also goes to kind of the construction of the attack. The back line's much better. They made some good moves. The attack is okay. Robin Lud didn't get it done, period. Ethan Finley, good player, maybe not the difference-making player in the way that, say, a Jonathan Dos Santos was for the Galaxy, or Pavone could have been, or Alessandrini might be in El Tráfico. Maybe that's the next step for them, is looking ahead and saying, okay, the defense is fine, assuming we keep Ike, and there is reports that he has signed a new deal, a TAM deal. But what do we do in the attack? Will Darwin be back? That's a big question. Do we think he will?
You asked this question like 3 months ago. We talked about it. I feel very good that my answer then was no. I feel strong about that. Because of his age, because of the profile of how much money you're going to have to spend on him, because they don't have that to spend on three other guys, and because he didn't perform. What's the point of bringing – if he's not a starter in the two biggest games of your season, and he's there's no sell-on value for him because of his age. He's 32. He'll be 32.
Yeah.
There's literally no reason to bring him back, unless you have figured something out and you say, well – because of Angelo Rodriguez and Lott and what we had, you weren't a starter. But we actually think we could bring two or three people in to put a team around you that actually works. That would be the only reason, and I still think you shouldn't do that.
We'll see. Minnesota United, their season is over. They had a magnificent, resurgent, completely different than the 2 years prior, 2019. The ball did not go in the back of the net very often, but in the biggest game of the year for them, it did twice, and that was their undoing.
Throwing it out there, besides the goal, Jan Gregus is class.
He is class.
He is so much fun to watch. He's so clean on the ball. He's confident. He covers ground. He helps out back.
Kings
so.
Those long diagonals, man.
Yeah.
No, he's really good. Really, really good signing, but that goal, that legit goal, is like the perfect encapsulation of, like, if you're not a team that can go forward and put pressure on, you know, anyone, like you the margins are so thin defensively, you switch off for a second and you're done.
We're gonna do more Galaxy and El Tráfico, of course. This is Extra Time. This
Heard
is Major
it.
League Soccer. You know and expect that from us. Bobby, tell us how Guillermo Bercelotto set up his team.
Yeah, we've given them a little bit of criticism.
We've said they're
the
bad. They've been bad.
Yeah, but specifically because they didn't really seem to have any clear instruction. It was a 4-3-3 in the most basic way you could set up a 4-3-3, a center striker, three neutral hardworking center mids, two wingers. Scalotto mixed that up a little bit this time. And instead of having two wingers, this time it was Christian Pavone and Uriel Antuna, be out near the sideline, he actually brought them in and he had them play just off of Zlatan. If you look at the average positions map from this game of the average spot each player touched the ball, they were right there next to Zlatan, which we've been talking about. It almost functioned more like a 4-3-1-2 with Zlatan as a playmaker and those two guys as center strikers going wherever they wanted. You go back to that goal, Jan Gregus loses his run on Sebastian Lletget. That leads to it. But part of it is that Chase Gasper had both wingers on his side and just got caught in between trying to make a decision in an unfamiliar picture, and Scalotto deserves credit for that setup.
Chase Gasper was very, very good in this game. Basically the same age as Pavone, I think you pointed out, except he has like 5 years less international or 5 years less pro experience, hasn't played in a World Cup, but interesting to see where he'll go forward.
Shout out to the Gasper family.
Yeah.
Yes.
I love the Gasper family. That's all I'm saying. Yeah.
Do you actually?
Yeah.
Do you know them?
No. Well, I know Chase.
Okay.
He's a good dude. Right, just, his family.
Like that's the most Minnesota thing of all time. Shout out to the family.
Well,
family, friends. Great people, the Gaspers.
Yeah.
Roman Alessandrini made his return off the bench. He had a shot that stung the hands of Ito Manone. It looks like he probably won't start in El Tráfico, but he could be a big impact player. We'll talk about that.
You think the Galaxy are going to sign a couple more DPs before Thursday's game?
Why not? Go ahead and
How
do
many
it.
Do they get? They got
but,
six?
I would like to say here, and I think we talked about this once on the show the entire year, which is not enough, is in Major League Soccer, to lose a designated player for any period of time is a massive hit to a roster because of the way the salary cap works. We have not discussed enough this year that the Galaxy, yes, the Galaxy have an ability to bring in DPs that aren't called DPs, but we have not talked enough this year about the fact that Roman Alessandrini, who's a huge chunk of that roster, has not been available
and
basically.
And was arguably their best player in 2017.
Yep.
What a great team that was.
Wah, wah. But this team's moving on to the conference semis. That will be the nightcap game, the finisher for the conference semis. Let's talk about the Union, their first ever playoff victory. Four losses prior to that, three losses in Open Cup finals. Basically every big game they played, they lost it. And they won this one. But it looked like they were going to lose it. It sure did. Andre Blake flailing around. Three errors in the first half. 3-1 Red Bulls. Alejandro Bedoya playing on a quad that's hanging off by a ligament. Although Jim Curtin said afterwards, this wasn't a quad injury that he suffered. And it wasn't a re-aggravation. It was cramps. Which, I'm not sure I believe it. But we shall see. Man, what did this mean? To the Union, to their supporters. This is everything. And you saw the weather in Chester. It was miserable. Like, normal people don't leave their house in that scenario. It's two blankets and some hot chocolate. But that place was absolutely
packed.
It was
lit.
It was wild. Yeah. It was incredible. It was. Don't doubt this.
These are the moments.
David, is still in his 20s. He could use that. Yeah,
these are the moments as a fan that you always remember of, like, the really crappy weather and you were bundled up and it sucked, but it was awesome and you celebrated and you got home and you had to throw away your gloves because they were soaked through and all that. These are, like, the epic moments of being a sports fan, especially in the Northeast. Shout out Northeast.
Wow, and silver spoon. Just throwing away gloves.
Right?
Just a good pair of gloves. Just throwing them in the trash. Oh, yeah. These are wet. I can't wear them ever again.
I've never worn a pair of gloves in my entire life.
So tell us about what it means for Philly, for the Union. This. I mean, you could feel the emotion.
They wear like cashmere gloves.
Yeah,
and they
exactly.
Get, like, sodden.
Yeah. Well, they're custom made.
Pick them up in Times Square.
Exactly.
Okay, I bet.
Substitutes made the difference for the Union. Jim Curtin went to El Seno. Bobby, any one-liner there? Just waiting for you here. No, Fafa Picot dunked on Tim Parker, like posterized him, turned Tim Parker into Sean Bradley in that moment. And then Marco Fabian, who doesn't get the start for Brennan Aaronson, an 18-year-old American, comes in and like schrosses it right into the corner.
It was just
a wonderful game. This game, we were yelling, we were running in circles, Bobby was hugging Charlie Davies. We don't know why.
I mean, because Bobby is a lifelong Philadelphia Union fan. I thought that I actually watched Matchday Central last night. I thought Bobby's point was correct. The first hour of the game, this was Philly trying to set the Red Bulls up a little bit and understanding how Red Bull played. I'm going to get to that in a second. But the question was, like, why didn't Fafa Picot start? Why did Vooten or Santos, why did those two start up top in the 4-4-2 diamond? And I think, one, Philly were 1-4-1 in Picot's last six starts, and he's scored like one goal since early June. He just hasn't been particularly good going forward. And two, if you're Jim Curtin and your job has been like hanging by a thread for the entire time that you have been manager, you're going to start in the playoff game. You're going to start the two guys that your boss brought in.
And in the formation that your boss asked you to play at the beginning of the year.
Like Ernst Tanner brought in Vooten and Santos. Those are the guys who are going to start. And like it ended up working out because when Picot came on, his fire in his eyes, and the same El Seno and Fabian doing what they're brought here to do. But I think the question, if you're from New Jersey watching this game, is like, why were we spending so much time defending in our goalkeeper's lap? The whole time, after the first 20 minutes, the Red Bulls didn't press anymore. I don't know if they could press anymore. But it was a repeat of the same thing that we've seen from New York all year long. They dropped 22 points from winning positions all season, which is worst of any playoff team, fourth worst in the league. They had a 2-0 lead. They had a 3-1 lead. They lost them both. They lost to the Union. It is, like, I don't know whether it's the end of this era of Red Bulls, but it feels like a bunch of guys aren't going to be back, and it just feels like they don't have that identity that was so like rock solid. Yeah. And like it was their innate advantage from 2015 to 2018.
I mean, 14-18, and I'm basically parroting Mark Fishkin here, who does an incredible job covering the Red Bulls. They're going to look back on that window and they're going to think, God, we should have got one. We got a couple shields. We didn't get it done. 10 different teams in 10 years have knocked out the Red Bulls, and we will get to them here because there are a lot of people in my mentions and Extra Time's mentions just yelling and just rabble-rousing about Chris Armas and his future and where this club should go. But I want to bring it back to the Union.
I thought we were going to spin ahead with the Union to the preview.
Has anybody really answered what it means to the club? Like, we talked about Jim Curtin's game plan.
I thought that the Union coming into this game as a whole, because of what the angst that Red Bulls have as a club have as well, paired with where the Union are at, felt like the game with the most pressure. And the Union weren't a favorite in the way that Atlanta United were or Seattle were, and the embarrassment that it would have been to lose this game. But it felt like the Union as an organization are almost in a tougher spot when it comes to the way you feel inside that building, and that's being on the cusp of getting over the hill.
And it was one of, like, that's so Metro was going a million miles an hour in this direction,
yeah.
And same old Union going a million miles an hour in this direction.
Right.
And like, that's so Metro, yeah. Destroyed, same old Union.
And having been in organizations where it is an epic failure because you're a favorite, I can tell you that it's actually harder to be in an organization where you feel like you are an inch away from pushing into the next tier. And the Union have been there for 2 years now with the young players they have, the talented young coach, the savvy veterans. This is a club that is on the precipice of moving into the next tier. And if they had lost this game, they would have been knocked down again. And I could feel that pressure building into this one.
Now they get Atlanta United. So let's go back to Red Bulls because we will look ahead here in just a second. How should this season be rated? Some of those stats you gave, or that's a gut punch for the red side in New York. What was missing? Was it talent, as the guys at this table on Matchday Central said? And then again, Chris Armas, should he be under pressure?
Can I just answer the first question with
sure.
The second question and say yes? They lost Tyler Adams, who was a top five performer in 2018 Major League Soccer, and BWP, who's their all-time leading goal scorer, was out basically the entire year with injury, and they replaced him with Christian Casares Jr., Brian White, and Tom Barlow. I understand the idea of building from a club. Trust me, no one watches those guys more and wants them to be good, but a reality has to set in at some point, which is you need to set guys up for success. Chris Armas did not have the tools that he needed to be a great team. You could argue on the margins they could have been a little bit better or a little bit worse than what they were. There could have been decisions he could have made better that pushed them from sixth to fifth, but they were not a top four team talent-wise in the Eastern Conference. They weren't a top eight team in Major League Soccer, probably, in terms of the talent on the roster. You can't lose.
Way lower than that, by the way.
But Tyler Adams is a generational talent for the United States National Team. I would argue he's our biggest prospect. He was starting for a Champions League top two Bundesliga team the moment he landed in Germany last year, and you replaced him with another kid from Red Bulls too, and Mark Schakowsky. So they didn't make any attempt to cover those losses, and I think I find it hard to put the blame on Dennis Hamlett and Chris Armas with what they've done with what they have.
So Long regressed, Parker regressed, Lawrence regressed, Murillo regressed, Sean Davis regressed, Kaku regressed, though Kaku showed me a lot the second half of the season, I think. And all of that is just lost Tyler Adams.
Well, it's a lot easier to play center back when you have the best center mid, D-mid in the league in front of you. It's a lot easier to set guys up in front of you when you have BWP in front of you.
There's also weird elements to that. You're right. That is the perfectly fair argument, and you could take this either way, but Long and Parker get big new contracts. They're not the first players to drop off after they get the biggest contract of their career.
And Long's in and out with the national team at a different level.
Michael Murillo and Aaron Long have the transfer bids come in. It's difficult to move past that when you don't get what you want. Kaku, same thing, transfer saga. So, Saga, the question is, did Chris Armas on the margin not handle that as well as he could have? Maybe, but those are real things that are adversity for a team and a manager to overcome.
I think that's absolutely fair. I also think that his seat is going to be really hot to start next.
Also week. Fair.
All right, we shall see with the Red Bulls. Another season, another playoff loss. Portland Timbers just sort of stumbled, fell, dragged their way into the postseason at the very, very end, and the Diego Valeri thing hung over their head, and it's still hanging over their head because Valeri was not in the lineup for Giovanni Savarese as the Timbers went to Sandy in rain and sleet and snow or whatever it was that the Utah clouds pounded down on them. Savarese said this at halftime as to why he didn't start Valeri. It's a simple and easy decision for two special reasons. One, he's coming back from an injury. We need to make sure we manage his minutes. Second, the team played really well last week. So, Andy Polo plays, Dairon Asprilla plays.
And scores.
Of course he scored.
Him and Franco Escobar postseason starts, and they just know where the goal is innately. But the Timbers lose. We will talk a lot more about RSL as we look ahead of their matchup with the Seattle Sounders. Let's talk about Portland and in our pre-meeting where we kind of like set the lines for where we're headed. We wouldn't let Doyle tell us what he was thinking because something was bubbling up inside of you when it came to the Timbers, and now I'm going to let that bubble right up.
Andy Polo has one goal and three assists in over 3,000 MLS minutes, and he started over Diego Valeri? Or when you Valeri's too hurt to go 90. You have to bring him in 65th minute. You take off your leading scorer? Instead of taking off Polo, I don't understand what Gio Savarese has done in the second half of the season. I have no idea why Jeremy Obobese plays as a left winger. It makes zero sense. Playing Sebastian Blanco as a false nine makes very little sense. Like, giving Diego Valeri 20 minutes in by definition, your biggest game of the season when he's Diego freaking Valeri. And by the way, who got the game-winning goal the last time they played RSL? Diego Valeri. It doesn't make any sense, especially because, like, there was the data point from last year's playoff run. Obobese wasn't great, but he played as a center forward, and that opened up space underneath for Blanco and Valeri to do, and Dairon, to do their work in the playoffs and actually get to MLS Cup. And, like, you had this. Just go back to that formula. And instead, he tried something brand new, and they basically didn't create anything all night. And if you look at, like, you think Red Bulls fans are mad. Look at Timbers fans right now. Timbers fans are absolutely livid with their team, and they have no idea what's going on. And, like, I don't either. I have no idea how to justify. Andy Polo has one goal in 3,000 minutes, and he's an attacker, and you leave him on the field? And he's not, like, 17. He's not a kid who you're trying to coach up. He's 25 years old.
Anybody can follow that up? I'm not sure I can.
No. The only other point you have to throw out there is, outside of the tactical decisions, the mentality they started this game with and played with for 45 minutes was terrible. And I don't know if it was, well, we're going to win this game, so they were relaxed, or if it was just not being prepared. But there was only Gio Savarese said it at halftime. This is not me saying it. There was only one team on the field for the first 45 minutes. They scored 90 seconds into the second half. They played with a little bit of energy or a little bit of drive that just did not exist for 45 minutes in an away playoff game, which just makes no sense.
All right, let's move on. We will talk more about RSL in just one second.
We're here for RSL.
Here at the Riot, baby. Here at the Riot.
Here at the Riot.
Unless the Galaxy win, that's the last one, so belt it out, right? Yeah.
Oh, I'm still here when they're away.
Yeah, okay. Just making sure.
Oh, you're right. It's not at the Riot.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Here at the Link, where the battle hymn has rung.
The Link?
CenturyLink. The Clink.
Gotcha. Toronto.
The
DC
greenest
United,
skies I've ever
maybe
seen.
Maybe the driest 90 minutes we got this weekend. And by maybe, I mean definitely.
I wonder
why. We're not going to do anything on RSL?
We are. It's coming.
Okay.
Yeah, you weren't listening.
Okay.
I just said
True.
It. I said
True.
It twice.
I wonder why Toronto had the best weather for the
Oh, because David
game.
Goss was there enjoying the
I got
six,
you, six
with his woes. Wayne Rooney. Can we do the – how do you say goodbye in English, Bobby? Give us a little – just a little flavor here. Say
good – ta-ta, right?
Ta-ta-yo, mate.
Whoa. Wayne Rooney's gone. Rooney is gone. Bill Hamid made an error, and then Marky Delgado scored, and then – DC did very, very little until the very, very end. And then Lucas Rodriguez got on a flicked on ball at the back post. And here we go to extra time. Maybe, just maybe, Benny Ball's going to do it. Toronto FC doesn't have Josie. They're playing Alejandro Pozuelo as a false nine. It's kind of weird from them. Omar Gonzalez picked up an injury, so he's not in the game. And this is an opportunity. And Toronto just smacked him. New rule in the Audi 2019 MLS Cup playoffs and going forward. If
Mercy
you
rule
allow
in extra time?
Four goals, maybe even three in extra time, that is equivalent to a golden goal. It's over.
Yeah.
You walk off the field.
Yeah.
Nick DeLeon, after he scores that goal, after he was the GOAT last year for DC in the playoffs, when he bends it in, he just gets to walk off.
Yeah.
That's the new rule.
I think that's fair.
Yeah. We'll talk about Toronto in just a second. Josie Altidore not in the 18. Omar Gonzalez, they say, will be back, but those are two big question marks. Wayne Rooney, Benny Failhaber, sitting in this very seat on Match Day Central, which, of course, you should watch the pregame and postgame shows every single playoff match day, says it's the same old DC now that Wayne's gone. No difference from when he arrived. The biggest difference, you would say, is Audi Field, and that is a huge difference, to be fair, for DC United, the club. But on the field, is Benny right? Is this the same old DC? When they look ahead to 2020 and beyond,
yeah.
What might they see?
I think one of the things we've talked about all post coming into the postseason is match winners. How many teams have them? What they can do for you? DC United doesn't have one going forward. And there have been a lot of times over the last 5 years, I guess you could say, post Dero, where they haven't had one. And Benny's gotten the most out of his team because no one believes in us. Let's grit. Let's grind. You know, we're going to prove everyone wrong. All of that. That's the team you're looking at next year. Ola Kamara is not a guy who can create things, who can take defenders out of the play. That's your replacement for Wayne Rooney.
You got Yamil Assad.
Yeah, another player who can't take defenders out of the play or create things. He's a straight-line runner and a good player. Paul Arriola, good player. Straight-line runner, will do his job, will cover a ton of ground. Lucas Rodriguez, you don't think has that. I think he might have a little more quality in him.
More of a pressing guy.
Fair. I think he has a little more quality in him than what we saw this year. I think we'll see some of that next year because I think he'll come central a little bit more. But in total, that's who they are. They've got pretty good center backs. Bill Hamid had a bad day yesterday, but he's still one of the top goalkeepers, if not the top goalkeeper in Major League Soccer. Otherwise, they don't have match winners, and it doesn't seem like they're going to replace them. And when you look back, we talked about Red Bulls and an era and decisions. The inability to sell Lucho Acosta when they did may be one of the big moments in DC United history, because all of the success, everything they had, they're now walking away with nothing. They're not getting any money for Rooney. They're not getting any money for selling Lucho Acosta that they can push on further down the line to new players. And they're going to be the team they were 2 years ago, now just in Audi Field.
It was a bad year for teams that had the choice to sell players and didn't, right? Almost all of them. But going back to what you said, I mean, let's think about DC in 2020, guys. Their lineup, if they invest in a new number 10, because we don't think Lucho is coming back, or even if he does come back at the right price point, all of a sudden we're talking about Ola Kamara.
There's no way Lucho Acosta is on DC United next year.
Okay, fair.
He didn't even play.
All right, then let's say they put a few million dollars into a new one, into an improved version of Lucho Acosta. Based on the fact that they just took Wayne Rooney's salary off their books and they just took Lucho Acosta's salary off their books. That's a lot of money that has now become available for that player.
Okay.
So now it's Ola Kamara at the nine, Lucas Rodriguez, who came in as a highly touted Argentine youngster who will almost certainly get better next year, Paul Ariola on the right, Russell Canales and Junior Moreno at defensive midfield, Brianna Birnbaum at center back, Bill Hamid in goal. That's still a pretty good team. If we were to take that 11 going to 2020, I suspect all of us would put them in the top seven for a playoff position.
All right, we shall see. The number 10, there's a there, but we can't spend too much time on DC United because they ain't playing no more. Seattle Sounders are going to be playing.
Playing no more.
Hey, come on. Just let me have my little vernacular.
Yeah, we don't say that.
In Kansas, but I just wanted to throw it in there. All right, Seattle Sounders, Jordan Morris, moving on. Dallas pushed them to the very brink, to the point in extra time where it looked surely like Dallas were going to be the team that won this game, and in the end they were not. Hat trick, first ever for Jordan Morris as a professional. Paxton Pomegranate came on and changed the game. Reggie Cannon as a winger was pretty good. Let's talk about Dallas before we get to Sounders and preview that RSL game. Dave, what did it mean for FC Dallas, the club? I think we've already basically said that this was a success this season.
Yeah.
Lucci got them to the playoffs. And then they had an inspirational game that just didn't go their way.
But it showed the character of what the club wants to be. And I have, not bias, but a little experience in terms of watching Lucci Gonzalez's groups for about 5 years at the youth level and watching FC Dallas at the youth level as well. And I messaged you guys this morning and said, Brandon Cervena maybe shouldn't, but he's so confident on the ball. He's so confident to play in pressure, to play in moments that the average American player is not, that the average MLS Academy graduate is not. And that is something that's imprinted in this group from top to bottom through this academy. It's a belief that you're capable of playing with anyone on the field in any atmosphere, the belief that you can use the ball to help you no matter what's going on around you. And FC Dallas went to Seattle, went into a game where they weren't favorites in an atmosphere that was tough, an experience that was new for about 90% of the players on the field, and they played the better game, but they played it in their way. And they played high up the field, and they possessed the ball, and they possessed the ball in pressure, and they moved their pieces around, and they still look comfortable when Cervena goes wide, and Hollingshead comes inside, and Ferreira goes up top, and Paxton Pomegranate comes off the bench. They showed how they want to play this game. They showed what they want their club to be, and I thought this was a big moment for them to go out in this game and not sit behind the ball and hope they get the win, to say 2019 was this is our high watermark, and 2020 is going to go from here and go better, and this is the best case scenario for them in terms of the club that they can be, which is we're going to produce some of the best players in the league. We're not going to purchase them. We're going to produce them, and we're going to be this group, and this is what Lucci wants. And it was exciting to see. Unfortunately, they didn't get the win, but they played pretty well.
So you lose 4-3 and you're out of the Audi MLS Cup playoffs, but then North Texas SC, the League One affiliate, wins a championship later on in the day. Beat Greenville Triumph 1-0 in the first ever USL League One final. Arturo Rodriguez scored the goal. And that one, I believe, is the MVP of the league. They found him, I think, just kind of
playing in Dallas.
Yeah.
And just his brother might be even better.
His dad was just like, hey, we need a spot for this guy. And that ended up being the spot. And a bunch of their academy kids were good there, too. Quickly, and we'll move on. I mean real quickly. What's a quick checklist for them this offseason?
They got to sell someone. I think if you don't sell any of the young players, then you risk a little bit of calcification and the type of things that we saw from DC or Red Bull this year. So that's one. And it doesn't have to be all of them. You don't clean house, but you just show that path exists. And two, I assume a few of the veteran contracts are coming off the books. You got to get a winger or center forward, like maybe it's Cobra, who can go 2,500 minutes, give you 12 to 15 goals, and be a match winner this time of year.
It's the one thing they've actually spent on and they've done poorly.
Yeah.
Lamar was supposed to be that guy. Mascara was supposed to be that guy.
Aranguiz. Yeah.
Exactly. It's the one thing they've actually attempted to do and they've just not been able to
do. Yeah, and by the way, a worry out of this game was that it was Matt Hedges and Reto Ziegler and Brian Acosta who didn't look good. It wasn't the kids. The kids were all pretty good. It was those veterans who kind of let them down.
Don't think there was a more emotional moment in the studio watching these games than when Brian Acosta's on the break late in this game and does not square the ball. Just screams of frustration.
Blinders!
That's how I feel when Gasca's on one of his like 3-minute monologues. Like,
We definitely don't feel that about
I
you.
I learned it from an expert.
When you do that, we just are on the edge of our seats, just drew like more, Doyle. Just
I give
more.
You gold.
Atlanta!
I'm like Piatti.
Didn't give us gold, didn't give their fans gold, but it was good enough. 1-0 against the Revs, who pushed them. Franco Escobar, he of 3 goals in 6 postseason games and 2 goals in 47 regular season games, scores yet again, gets the winner. But the Revs have reason to be pretty happy about 2019 after they had a lot of reasons to be pretty miserable about 2019 under Brad Friedel. Bruce Arena comes in, turns it around, gets them to the playoffs, pushes Atlanta to the brink. Gustavo Bow, Carlos Hill, there will be signings, you know that. They improved. What did they show in this game? Bobby, I'll bring you in here.
I really wanted Goss to take this one.
Boom.
Goss is the one.
I didn't know you were like buttoning your shirt. And
no, Goss is the one with heat here.
As the manager, when I feel you disengage, I try to bring you back in.
No, I backed up on person.
On
purpose.
Okay.
On purpose to give David
space. There was a
space.
Fluctuation. That was the issue.
Give us your 3-minute monologue in a minute.
Yeah, I was jacked up. I thought the Revs came out. They played an open game. Miles Robinson's not in. You see Lorentowicz starting. You know that you can get after this team because you did so 2 weeks ago in their building. And I thought they played aggressive. Bringing in Scott Caldwell and just saying we're going to try and button things up in the back so that our attacking pieces can go for it. I thought we're good. Bunbury going out wide, connecting with Pinilla at times. Then otherwise, Pinilla being isolated and Heal and Bow playing a little bit better than they did 2 weeks ago. To me, the Revs had every chance to go ahead in this game. And if they go ahead, they win this game. So if I'm Bruce Arena, I come out of this one and say, what else could I possibly do? I set my team up. We were aggressive. We created chances. That's all we wanted to do. At some point, a Gustavo Bow, a Carlos Heal, a Christian Pena, they have to finish one of those opportunities. But they were there for them, and it was fun. It was a good game.
I was shocked Atlanta didn't bunker. I thought, especially with Miles Robinson out and what he gives them as far as that quote-unquote free safety, as Jeff Renowitz put it, in the summer, that they would be a little bit more conservative because they said, leading into the game, we got to be a little bit smarter. We can't make mistakes. And because of the way they won MLS Cup in 2018, they didn't do it. The game was open. They gave opportunities. But in the end, they got the win. There was a scary moment. Michael Parkhurst's shoulder popped out of socket very, very late in this game after he was absolutely magnificent. Any worries about what he would bring in this match were completely assuaged, but now we don't know whether he'll be able to play in this next match, which is a massive worry once again. Let's put a bow on it. That's the first round. It was incredible. It was awesome.
Bow.
What? Oh. I don't know if that was as good as you thought
high
it
fives,
was.
Guys.
I don't know. I'm going to avoid that one. We'll leave you hanging.
Cool.
Let's look ahead to the conference semifinals. Wednesday and Thursday. Those are the games. FS1 has the games on Wednesday.
Feels like we should do a whole nother show on these.
I know it does. It kills me. And I'm actually going to make the executive decision right now that we will not be stopping at an hour.
Wow.
I've been
doing this a lot. Anders hasn't said a word to me.
Oh, boy.
But I'm making this executive decision.
Milberger's back there strangling Anders.
Exactly. But we must. It's the playoffs. We have to talk about this stuff. NYCFC, Toronto FC.
You're literally into extra time.
7 p.m. Eastern on FS1, Fox Deportes, TSN, TVA. TVA.
Yeah.
My bad. So, can Josie play? What do we think? He was not in the 18. He has a quad injury.
I would expect to see him in the 18 for this game. I would not expect to see him start.
Agree.
Omar, I think, is close to starting. They were saying in Toronto, it was literally last minute. He got hurt in training this week, and then it didn't pass like the last minute test. He thought he was good to go, and then they did the test. So I would expect Omar to be available in this game. Mavinga came off hurt. Marky Delgado seemed to come up with something. So there's other question marks around this as well. Drew Moore came on kind of as Bobby Warshaw sub to just see out the win, and then they ended up going extra time, and he played. Maybe you try something with that, but I would expect to see Omar. I would not expect to see Joe.
But Jonathan Osorio and Richie Larea are the two best players in MLS right now.
Potentially.
Woo!
Yeah.
Woo!
Would not want to play those two at BMO Field right now.
That finish by Osorio. Ooh, the second one? Yeah. Nice.
I want to expand on what Matt said. Quick shout out to Greg Vanney, too, because we have talked about when the coaches got it wrong. Greg Vanney got it right. No Josie, moves Alejandro Pozuelo to number nine, has Tsubasa Endo and Marky Delgado run beyond. Delgado gets a goal from that exact type of pattern. It was very well done by Greg.
It was a little NYCFC-ish, right? With Eber vacating as kind of a false nine, and suddenly Tajiri Shradi or Matriza or whoever else is Castellanos is hitting the gap, and suddenly they're the ones who are behind the defense.
And I think it was the best game Pozuelo has played maybe since his first game, which was against NYCFC. Mm-hmm. He looked really involved and active, which was huge. And as a false nine, he could choose where he wanted to play. He didn't have to take up where Josie wasn't. Like, he got to dominate what he wanted to do, and I thought he was really good at it.
Yeah, so shout out to Vanney for getting that right. You know what's interesting about Toronto FC right now is what made them so spectacular in 16 and 17 was the high-end talent. Jovinko, Michael, Josie. But they also got the most out of the middle class of that roster. Nick Hagelin, Eric Zavaleta, Marky Delgado, and Jonathan Osorio, for me, were huge, huge question marks going to 2017. I thought they were the weakness of that team. You get near the end of the season, and they were excellent. They were maybe not stars, but very much above average players. And that, among the other things that had gone wrong for a year and a half, was a big part of it, that the middle class of that team really, really struggled. They're back. Marky Delgado is playing well. Jonathan Osorio is playing well. Aro Jr., Justin Morrow, Richie Larea is playing great. And that is, for me, the big difference in this Toronto team over the last 3 weeks. It's not just the fact that Michael has improved his ability, but the middle class of that roster,
Bobby,
is back.
Bobby, you wrote about a month and a half ago, let's switch to NYCFC. You wrote, I thought, a really good piece breaking down how NYCFC attack, and it's two ways, right? It's either get the wingers inside so that they can run at your center backs in that gap between your midfield and your center backs. And the other way is like, okay, if you take that away, then they're going to throw Tinnerholm and Matarrita around the outside and hit those diagonals. Like this, no matter what field they're at, no matter who they're playing against, like this is what they do.
NYCFC, you mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, and by the way, they are at a different field.
Yeah.
City Field in Queens.
The citizens become the citizens.
Whoa, that was better than the last
one.
See, the last one was terrible.
Let's go, Mets, man. Let's go.
I saw that one from
LA. You've been to games at City Field.
Yeah.
And we think it's kind of a lame storyline, people trying to glom onto this, because NYCFC had played there. They played the Crew there, I think, if I remember correctly. Is it a good place for soccer?
Yeah, it is. I think it's better than Yankee Stadium. I've been to a few international friendlies there. The field seems to fit a little bit better. It's just a nicer stadium, if I'm being real. So the atmosphere.
Mets fan.
I think it's just as
good.
But
I agree. It is.
Exactly.
I like it better than Yankee Stadium.
So, I think it'll be a cool experience.
Favorite NYCFC.
By far.
They're at home. They're the better team. We're in the regular season, no doubt. How big of a favorite?
If Josie and Omar can't play, they're huge favorites. And I know that we just got talking about how good Toronto was against D.C., but D.C. hasn't been good for months and months and months. Since April, like other than LA, well, I mean, all season long, other than LAFC, NYCFC has been the best team in the league. But like, they really came into their own in like mid spring, and they've been on like a 70-75 point pace since then. Now, they did struggle both games against Toronto. Toronto killed them the first time, but that was way back in March up at BMO Field. And in this most recent game,
that was Pozuelo's debut, wasn't it?
Yep, chip.
Yeah.
Yep.
And then in this most recent game, Toronto killed, destroyed them at Yankee Stadium, but they missed a penalty kick, they missed two tap-ins, and it ended up 1-1, but there was only one team on the field in that game. The mitigating circumstances, Eber didn't play, Max Morales didn't play. I'm not sure how much we take out of that. I do think that Toronto's not afraid of NYCFC. I think other teams, if Philly was going in there, they'd be a little bit afraid. I think Atlanta would be a little bit confused. Toronto, not about that. So I think it's maybe like, that's a mitigating circumstance in the other way, but like NYCFC are where they are for a reason. They've been really good for a long time. They're really healthy. They have like three or four guys who are best 11 players in Morales, Ring, Tinnerholm, Chanot, like that caliber.
And you're not even talking Matriza, Eber, Castellanos.
They're top five in almost every position on the field right now.
Yeah. But so I think that, like, I think NYCFC is going to waltz, But Benny Failhaber this weekend was saying they don't have a superstar. As good as Maxey is, as good as Eber is, as good as Matriza is, they do not have a $15 million player on this team, and you need one of those guys in order to win in the playoffs.
Isn't Matriza the fifth most expensive guy in the league,
I think it was like $8
million.
But
yeah,
like,
I mean, he's...
I'm higher on Matriza than most. Cheap. I would put Matriza in that category. I'd probably put Maxey in that category, too. I see where Benny's coming from.
Take me inside Domi Trent's mind here, Bobby. And if you're NYCFC and you're looking at this game, and go through the Hall of Mirrors, try to find your way to the end of the line there. Okay. What's
I would
thinking?
Love to be in Domi Trent.
Oh, yeah. For sure.
As a legend.
That's like, we should do an MLS amusement park that's like inside the mind of Domi Trent.
So, is that a Rick and Morty episode?
Yeah, it might be.
Anyway.
What is NYCFC thinking? How are they approaching this game? How will they think, okay, Toronto's going to do this. They probably have Josie. We will tear them apart this way.
No, nothing. Because they've already set everything up and prepared everything for this type of circumstance. And I think the one thing that I misevaluated about Domi Trent when he came to this league is he put an extremely high priority, maybe higher than I've ever seen before from a manager, on flexibility. It's basically the first thing he wanted to do. He didn't care about building principles of play. All he wanted was to be able to shift in and out of different sets, different formations, and different passing variations. And he accomplished that a year and a half later. So, Andrew, what does he have in mind for this game? Nothing, because he spent 18 months putting in different options for this team so that they don't need to worry about specifics in any single game.
For Toronto, you have to come out in this game and you have to be on the front foot the first 25 minutes and hit them in the mouth, basically, because NYCFC is coming off a long layoff. You probably don't have the legs after 120 minutes to go strong for 90 minutes, and especially if Omar Gonzalez is in there, you can't dominate possession for the long stretches of this game because you probably can't defend with your even numbers in the back. So I think for Toronto, you got to come out, use the ball, be on the front foot, and create opportunities and see if you can rattle NYCFC a little or get a 1-0 lead.
Late game on Wednesday night, Seattle, Real Salt Lake, 10 p.m. Eastern, FS1, Fox Deportes, TSN, TVA, RSL. How should they approach this? How should they go for the upset? The game against Dallas was super, super open. They've got some players that can take advantage of open space. Severino, Rusnak, Damir Krylak somehow finds his way to sneak into that little gap between the back line and the goalkeeper and score headers in these playoffs, or maybe even go Karate Kid. How does Seattle deal with RSL, and how does RSL try to spring the upset?
I would say that RSL needs to take a page from Philadelphia's book. And in saying that, I mean that they should split the game into two intervals, the first 60 minutes and the last 30 minutes, because RSL have become a very good, intelligent, disciplined defensive team. Since the Gold Cup break, coming back, the final was July 7th. Since that point, RSL have conceded the fewest goals per game in the league, partially because Freddy Juarez has instilled a real sense of discipline in how they defend. So what I would do is I would lock the game down for 60 minutes, Damir Krylak and Albert Rusnak up top, and I would wait for those last 30 to bring in your El Seno, a Zhao Plata, or a Sam Johnson to change the game.
I mean,
it's a rough comparison to put them, but you know what I'm saying.
It's easier to lock the game down against Andy Polo and Dairon Asprilla Sebastian Blanco as a false nine than it is on the road against Nico Ladero, Raul Ruiz Diaz, Jordan Morris. Like, these guys are proven MLS match winners. They've done it year after, and they showed this weekend they could play like crap. And Seattle played like crap this weekend. They still generated 4 goals. They, like, every time they went forward, it felt like they were going to score. And I know that RSL is a better defensive team than Dallas, but they're not that much better. I don't know that RSL can go out there and do the type of things that Philadelphia did in terms of changing the game after an hour, though obviously really good performances from Plata and Johnson off the bench.
It's not even the best game Johnson's played.
Maybe, yeah. And I also don't know that... I don't think that they can use the ball to disrupt and disorganize the Sounders the way that Dallas did.
I disagree with you.
Okay.
I felt
based upon what?
I felt like the way they performed, two reasons. One, Seattle looked like a team that you could pass through.
Mm-hmm.
Partially because of Dallas's talent and ability, partially just because of Roman Torres and Christian Roldan and whatever else happened. So if they're going to allow themselves to be passed through, after about 25 minutes, Seattle started dropping in numbers.
Right.
Then Dallas could be as patient as they want. So if you're going to try and lock the game down, why not do it in the attacking half in possession? The other reason is I thought this was one of the best performances we've seen from Albert Rusnak, at least the first 45 minutes of finding spaces and leaving that midfield, because Everton Luiz covers enough ground in there to at least attract a Roldan or a Chara to allow Rusnak to then make the secondary runs and find a little bit of space. And he's the type of player in that situation where if you can get Torres to step to him, or if you can get Kim Kihee to step to him, he can slip in for Krylak. I think there's opportunities for them to break down Seattle with possession.
Is this the best chance for an upset, or is that the Galaxy just emotionally?
I think it's got to be the Galaxy, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Are you picking Seattle? Are you going out a limb?
I'm picking Seattle.
Can I reframe that, Andrew?
Sure, go for it.
This is your wheelhouse. What would be the biggest upset of these four games? Where is there the biggest gap?
I honestly think it would be this one, just because I think Seattle in the playoffs, Seattle with the, as we've said on the show, the match winners, they have three guys that you trust in this moment, and RSL, they don't. And RSL have been through, feels like, everything this year. New coaches, drama.
I mean, this
last season of Raimondo. It's been like a weight on them. So to me, it feels like at some point they were not going to be able to weather that weight. And Seattle is just the team that's like, man, I don't know. I don't think they can do it, but they're going to do it.
You had one game. Do you take Jordan Morris or do you take Jefferson Savarino?
Jordan Morris. I think Jordan Morris more consistently impacts games than does Jefferson Savarino. I really like Jeff Jefferson. Always have. But like him scoring the
game. You made a nickname up
for him. Yeah. I didn't make that up. Well, did I? Somebody made that up very early in his career. But like he doesn't score. This is not a goal that Jefferson gets on the ball and just like weaves his way through your back line. This is not a game in which
he's
dominant.
But that's not required of Jordan Morris.
Okay. I know
Jordan Morris plays with Nico Lodero and Raul Ruiz Diaz.
Okay, so that's why I would take. So that's why I would take Jordan Morris. You can't take them out of their environments, can you?
I don't, like, who's going to change this? Like a fantasy situation. Okay.
Fine. We'll see what RSL can do. They have
Savarino is like literally falling down as he scored.
Yeah,
that I mean goal. The ball like
and he that's a Christian Pulisic thing. He cannot shoot the ball without falling over. It's wild.
Tim Piem, FS1, Fox Sports, TSN, TV. We have to move on because I'm getting Andres Amari saying we're running out of time. Atlanta United, Philadelphia Union. How do you cope without Parker? It's Thursday, 8 p.m. Eastern, ESPN, Family of Networks, TSN, TV.
I just say one thing real quick because you gave
or
credit.
Or with Parker, maybe.
Listen, only one person can bring this show backwards, David.
You gave credit to a coach for doing something right just before. To Frank DeBoer's credit, he switched the way they were playing. He pushed Julian Gressel higher. He pushed Escobar out wide. That created the goal. So that Frank DeBoer deserves credit for making the right change at the right time and winning that postseason.
He also maybe deserves credit for benching Pity Martinez. You talked about Adrian Heath making big decisions. Well, that's a huge decision. I mean, we sat at this table early on in the year and just drooled, oh, Pity Martinez is going to be I think he was your newcomer of the year, Dave.
He's the best player in Major League Soccer.
Not the same thing. This isn't even close to the same thing as Darwin Quintero getting
back. Oh, sure. It's in the same vein of things.
No.
It's
mind-blowing. It's mind-blowing that Atlanta United has so many players and so many assets on their team that a $15 million player can get benched, but they have four, five, six other star players
okay,
on
like,
that team.
Props the Emerson, difference. I like Emerson Hyman, but like Emerson Hyman's on. He's a lone player.
But they could have played Tito Vialba there. Like they
wouldn't have though. You know they wouldn't have.
But they could have.
That's true.
Right? They also have Tito Vialba, who most other teams would kill to have in this league, and he would take them to a new level on the bench.
Embarrassment of
riches. It's how you know the league has made it is when you see $15 million purchases and the manager is like, oh, just put that in the trash.
2 years in a row.
2 years in a row.
2 years in a row.
Well, at least Barco last year was a victory cigar.
Hey,
you know?
But this year Barco lit the victory cigar.
He hit the pass that he never hits. That's a pass he never hits. He's so good at beating guys off the dribble, eliminating them, and then letting them right back into the play because he plays backwards or he plays square. He almost never sees those overlaps. He never splits lines. The one time he did it, Escobar killed the Revs.
Joseph Martinez was a little bit like Zlatan in this first round and that he wasn't particularly impactful in this match. They will need more of him against the Union. The Union have some injury issues of their own, but I do want to know how you guys would cope without Parkhurst, but we'll kind of go both ways on this. Kasper Schabilko, not in the 18 for this match against the Red Bulls. He's their 15-goal scorer. Actually, their top three scorers weren't even the starting lineup for the Philadelphia Union because that's Marco Fabian and El Seno as well. El Seno is the second leading scorer for this team in 2019. Alejandro Bedoya was just dragging himself around the field. Bobby, I mean, you noticed. We all noticed. He couldn't kick a ball more than 10 yards after about the 75th minute. He played all the way into extra time.
Absolutely incredible. He scores the goal in the 30th minute or so, and from that moment on, he grabs the leg, and Jim Curtin said it was cramps. He was grabbing his quad, right, in that 30th minute. So he played for 90 minutes with a partially torn, if anybody that's ever pulled a muscle, if you haven't, it feels like someone kicked you. And then you look around, you look, and you realize that nobody's near you. And all of a sudden you have to play with that. I can't even fathom how he did it. It was one of the most incredible things I've seen in American soccer for him to battle through with the, I'm also just a sucker for those sports stories, right? The guy with the armband fighting through, but it was marvelous to watch.
And the goal he scored at that time, you go into the locker
room,
yeah, to change the momentum. Like, that was a massive moment for them, and he got that done.
What's the bigger concern? Atlanta's center back situation or Philadelphia Union looking at maybe Casper? Maybe they were saying he was on track to potentially be back for this weekend, so maybe he will be back for Thursday. Or Bedoya, who's going to be in the training room for the better part of, I don't know, like,
I'd be shocked if
96 hours
starts this game.
I would be shocked too, but I was shocked he stayed on the field.
But there's one thing to already be in and say, I'm just going to gut this out, to then have a trainer and doctor say, yes, you're allowed to dress, warm yourself up, get yourself loose, and then actually play. So I'd be shocked. But I think they can fill in for him in central midfield, probably potentially good enough.
At this point, it's Crivall,
yeah,
right? I don't know, man. Like, this is brutal on both teams. I think it's worse for Philly. Bedoya just means so much to them. Whereas with Atlanta, you can still have Escobar, Gonzalez Pires, and Pogba, who have all been, you know, MLS quality or above players for good chunks of this season. So
they've done.
Who do you put in the center? Pogba or Gonzalez Pires?
Oh boy, that's like Sophie's choice, man. Yeah. Maybe just go to a back four then.
I mean,
yeah. I think there's a chance he goes to the back four because Escobar's been a lot worse when Robinson's not been out there.
Yeah.
And I don't know that you want to move Gonzalez Pires. For Philly, the Shabilko one, I thought Santos, that was the best game I've ever seen him play.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't seen Parker and Long struggle with a speed striker like that maybe in their entire time they've been together. Stretch the back line, but pick up the ball, beat the first defender, and make accurate passes from there. So I think he's fine going into Atlanta, starting him, especially against potentially George Bello and Franco Escobar at center back.
Wooten has no goals so far in Major League
Soccer. Guy probably shouldn't start.
Yeah, he did not look good in this game. We got to hurry this thing up. We do have Evan Ream talking about Sacramento, the 2019 MLS coming up. El Tráfico, the perfect way to finish the conference semifinals.
Oh, who
this
cares
is what
about
we
this
wanted.
Game.
LAFC, LA Galaxy. Sorry, Minnesota. We, you know, had you moved on, we would have been happy for you as well. But come on, El Tráfico. This is really what the neutrals wanted to see yet
Don't
again.
Rope us all in.
10:30 p.m. Eastern on ESPN, ESPN Deportes, TVN. TVA. Five games, no wins for LAFC. This is the hump they have to get over. MLS Cup is what they need to go down truly, truly, truly as one of the best teams in MLS history. Is this game going to live up to the expectations? Because the expectations are sky high, as are the ticket prices. I think you sent something to the group chat this morning where on the resale market, it's like $3,500 right now just to get in the building.
No, it's over $300 now just to get in the building. Ah. The top end tickets are approaching $4,000.
Yeesh.
And it's like the Clippers and the Lakers are playing that
to
night.
Open the season.
Yeah, and LA, the El Tráfico is a hotter ticket.
We mentioned in our column today, Doyle, where this ranks in the history of most anticipated playoff games.
I think it's number one. Like, Red Bulls versus Atlanta last year was really big because those two teams combined for 140 points. But I think we all probably agree that LAFC is the best soccer team that we've ever seen in MLS. And they're playing a team that they haven't been able to beat. And it happens to be their next door neighbor who happens to have maybe the biggest star in MLS history on their roster. Anything is possible in this game. That said, given the way the Galaxy played against Minnesota United, they play like that against LAFC, they'll be down 5-0 at halftime.
Except Walker Zimmerman, Marc-Anthony Kay. Those are two huge losses for LAFC.
Zimmerman is back in training, they say. But, I mean, that decision day.
And I heard Taylor Twellman say that Kay is day-to-day.
I never believe day-to-day. Day-to-day is such a scam. It's like the biggest scam.
Maybe he lives his life day-to-day.
I love Mark.
Questionable is how I live my life.
I love Marc-Anthony Kay as a player. Phenomenal player. Seems like an incredible human being. He struggled in these games, though. He struggled when the pace has been fast against the likes of an LAFC or when Minnesota clog up the middle. And I do wonder if Lee Wynn is actually the better choice in that spot, because the Galaxy's main thing is making the three center midfielders for LAFC uncomfortable, and Lee Wynn has experience dealing with those situations.
Do you start Adama Diomande, who is back from the 60, substance abuse 60 and
minute,
behavior program?
60-minute sub.
Yep.
Did you... I don't know how to... Did you see Diego Polenta this week?
Yeah.
I think that my strategy would be to drag him around as much as possible. And play the three most mobile attackers I can against those four center backs.
Except then you don't get Vela running at guys from the wing where in his
they kind of
I'm sorry,
that
wait,
out.
Wait, sorry. Do you not want Carlos Vela coming off the wing against fullback Dave Romney?
I want Brian Rodriguez doing it too.
But you could do Rodriguez on the other side, play Diego Rossi as the false nine.
Yeah. I've let you guys escape without predictions, really, except in sports.
I predict Bobby will evade any predictions.
All right, that's a great prediction. You win that prediction. Will LAFC get over the hump? Is this the game they get over the hump? Because if they do, it feels to me like they go to MLS Cup, three home games, they get more time to rest. Come on. Come on.
Do they get over the hump? That's a good question.
Performance art. That is performance art from Bobby Warshaw. I guess we will find out.
Listen, I'm not going to lie. It's 51-49.
I'm more of a 53-47 guy in this situation. But you will not be able to avert your eyes from this one. The Audi 2019 MLS Cup playoffs have absolutely delivered so far. I know in the past, these knockout round games would have been one game anyway, but that is what it's going forward, and it's going to be a beautiful thing. Wednesday and Thursday night, all the coverage, MLSsoccer.com or the MLS app if you're out and about in that way. Before we get out of here, we have to talk about team number 29 in Major League Soccer. Currently 24 teams. Next year, Inter Miami and Nashville come in, then Austin FC, and then in 2022, St. Louis, and as announced today, Sacramento Republic makes it 29. They will build a $30 million 20,100-seat soccer stadium in the downtown Rail Yards District. They got some new money. It helped push them over the top, at least reportedly. Let's find out more from a guy who knows all about this, has been there since the very beginning. That is Evan Ream. He's a reporter at the Davis Enterprise. He works with NorCal Premier Soccer. He is on the line now. Evan, welcome to Extra Time.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys. I really appreciate it.
Let's just get right into it, man. You've been there since the beginning. It has been stop-start, but we are finally here. Sacramento is coming to Major League Soccer. Give us the Cliff Notes journey for the city, for the Republic, the club, for Major League Soccer. What's this mean for everybody involved?
Yeah, so, I mean, the Cliff Notes journey, you know, is one of the most successful startups to a lower division soccer franchise in, you know, this country's history, as you guys all know. It was sort of eclipsed by what Cincinnati did, but up until then, they had all the USL records for attendance. You know, won the championship in the first season in 2014, which is really one of the only times that anybody from Sacramento has really won anything. So it was really kind of a big moment for the city. And then I think everybody sort of got their hopes up and thought that, you know, maybe the Republic would be in MLS next year, or, you know, 2015, 2016. And then the club sort of hyped it and they started selling season ticket deposits specifically for MLS, and that was their main focus for a while, and then it sort of didn't really happen, and people in this city, as they often do, sort of felt overlooked by other markets, which they didn't necessarily feel were even as good or had the history of support that Sacramento did, even though that history isn't super long. I think people were most upset about probably Cincinnati getting into the league after such a short time, and so I think for a while, people became pretty jaded, and then there was this question of, you know, is this ever going to happen? And it, probably the most Sacramento thing to ever happen would be for a team to actually never get in. But, you know, it's good now. I mean, it's great that Sacramento is going in to the league, and I think that people will be really excited, and there'll be a tremendous amount of fan support, although I do think that probably some of the diehard fans were really upset by how the situation was handled, both by the Republic and MLS. So I think they may have lost some people who, you know, I talked to a lot of people around the city, and a lot of people say, and I think it's a vocal minority, but a lot of people say, you know, we're happy and we want this club just to be in the USL. And so I think while some people are upset with MLS, overall, I think the majority of the city is really excited for Sacramento to finally have its second top division professional franchise.
Couple years to win those fans back. Maybe 2022 is the start date for this club as it stands right now. What was the difference? What pushed them over the line? Was it Ron Burkle? Was it the additional investment? Was it something else entirely?
You have to think it's definitely Ron Burkle and then the additional investment. You know, I don't know 100% for sure, but I do know that when Kevin Nagel bought the club, which as I want to say 2015 or 2016, I can't remember the exact date, the MLS expansion fee was significantly lower than what it is now, and I don't think that they had anticipated it being raised by as much as it has been. And so I think that with all the investment that him and his ownership group is putting in the club, the USL club as it is right now, the academy, and then the privately financed downtown stadium, I think that really what was needed was some additional capital. And they had some other people in the ownership group for a while, but you know, nothing really stuck. So I really do think, and again, I don't have confirmation on this, but I really do think it was really about getting that additional investment to pony up the money for the expansion fee in the privately funded stadium.
You mentioned the fans a little bit, the vocal minority, but for the majority, we've seen what Atlanta fans have brought, Minnesota, FC Cincinnati. Every group seems to be just a little bit different. Tell people around MLS what to expect from Sacramento Republic supporters.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, you know, it's just, I don't know how different it is, to be honest. And I bet fans will get mad at me for that, but I've been to almost every single MLS stadium there is. And yeah, I mean, there's subtle differences for every fan, but for the most part, everybody sings, you know, the same 10 songs in a lot of different places. And, you know, I can't really say how different it's going to be than any other group, although I do expect that the fans will come and they will bring it. The Tower Bridge Battalion is a pretty strong supporters group that's been active since the start date. They have a lot of really great fans, and I believe that the stadium plans call for their own designated supporter section, and I think that the club has been in talks with the fans as to what they want. So I can't really say how different it's going to be, but I know that I think Sacramento in general has a strong history of supporting its teams. I mean, I think for the longest time, the Sacramento Kings had the sellout streak record in the NBA. And so I guess other than cowbells, which I don't think they even allow at Sac Republic games, I don't really have a great answer for you.
Tell me about where they will be, where they will support their team. The rail yards, the stadium site, the word is that it's a $300 million stadium, 20,000 seats, a little bit more than that. It's a big development in Sacramento. It's a big deal in the city. What is that area like? What do you think the stadium will be like? What do you think game days will be like?
Yeah, so it's really interesting because Sacramento, and a lot of people, especially on the national scale, probably aren't familiar with this because nobody's ever vacationed to Sacramento before, but well, you got married over here. there's basically a giant hole in the middle of downtown, which at least as of a couple years ago was the largest urban infill project in the entire United States. So there's this space that is right downtown and is right, you know, on the river where there's just nothing. And, you know, I think in the early 20th century was actually like a very big business hub, like the rail yards district, when the rail yards were, you know, and railways were a huge deal in the United States, and it sort of fell into disrepair and people are really trying to bring it back. And so it's right downtown. It's going to be quite near to the new Kings Golden One Center. And I believe that they're planning light rail stops that will drop people off, you know, just right there. And it's really not too far from Midtown Sacramento, which is one of the coolest, and I say this without kidding, one of the coolest areas in this country to just go hang out. There's lots of great restaurants. There's lots of great bars. It's a really vibrant area with a lot of young people. And I think that in the last 10 or 15 years, the Sacramento downtown has been really revitalized. And this will just only continue to make the city even better. Because Sacramento is secretly, nobody knows this, Sacramento is a great city, but nationally no one would ever know about it. So this will just help, I think.
Nationally, there is one person that knows. I'm going to be the biggest proponent of Sacramento, Evan. You heard it here first.
Evan, I want to talk about the soccer side now. And sure. When you are a new club coming into this league, you've got to think about the comparables, right? So I want to know, do we think that Sacramento is more likely to be Atlanta, Minnesota, or Cincinnati in their first year?
probably Minnesota is my guess. I think everyone here would hope that they don't end up like Cincinnati on the field. I mean, that was a pretty big train wreck this last year, as we all saw. But I mean, just in terms of like the scale and scope of the club, you know, I've always compared it to, you know, the size of the operation, the type of players that they're going to sign. I really think it's going to be like one of those smaller market but smart teams, like, you know, Portland's Kansas City or Real Salt Lake. I think that would be a fair comparison. So out of the three, I really do think Minnesota United would be a fair expectation, and I think that everyone would be on board, and I think it would be realistic if they had sort of a similar three-year plan where, you know, sort of get a foundation at the start and maybe build up to it and maybe by year three make the playoffs. I mean, of course, everyone's going to want to make the playoffs first year and be successful right away, but I just don't know if that's going to be realistic based off of the size of this market, the types of players that they're going to attract.
Matthew, what do you think of the three-year plan?
It clearly works. Three-year plans are brilliant. The technical staff now, you kind of chuckled when we asked you about it, Evan. Are there names that we actually do need to know? Is there a sense that they're going to try to translate the success that they've had in USL? I think finished second in the West this year, up to MLS, or is there still a lot of moving pieces?
Second in the West. They finished seventh.
Seventh, yeah. All right. My bad.
That's okay. No, it's all good. You know, honestly, I think it's hard to say because
second last year. My bad. Anyway, sorry.
Yeah,
go
no,
ahead.
It's okay. They did well last year. You know, it's really interesting because I think for the last couple of years they've been operating on essentially and I don't know this for sure, but the budget has not been what it once was, especially when they came into the league. And that 2014 team had some really good players who they're paying a decent amount of money to come play. I mean, you look at a guy like Rodrigo Lopez, who had no business playing in the USL and actually had offers from MLS teams but turned them down. And as far as the technical staff, I mean, Todd Donovan is the general manager, and I think he's done a good job, and he did really well at San Francisco before that. And, you know, I would think that the current staff will get their shot to you know, prove themselves, but it's hard to say because I don't know what kind of resources they're dealing with right now, and I don't know if you could say that necessarily their finish on the finish in the table right now is a great predictor of how good the coaching staff necessarily is.
Follow Evan Ream on Twitter at Evan Ream. He will be covering the announcement as it continues and news continues to come out. I have one question for you, Evan, because this is Major League Soccer, and we must manufacture a rivalry. We need one. We have to have one. A new team cannot come into the league without one and a snappy name to go with it. So
it's drivable to San Jose.
Yeah, San Jose, is that the one? Is it SoCal? Is it like up north into Cascadia? Try to weasel in there? Like, what's the word for this team?
Yeah, so I think it would be San Jose, but I don't know if San Jose would feel that way, if that makes sense. It's kind of like how right now, like, San Jose feels like, well, I guess I have a better example. It's like how everybody in Sacramento thought the Kings and Lakers were a rivalry, but they really weren't, because first of all, the Kings never beat the Lakers, and second of all, because the Laker fans didn't care. And
big shout, Bobby.
I wonder if that's going to be it, but I mean, there's already been a couple of big games in the Open Cup. They actually went to penalties one year, and Sacramento missed their last penalty to win it and end up losing. But I would think that would be the rivalry, and I'm voting for it to be called just Hella Cup. No, the Hella Cup.
Yeah, that's good.
I'm in for that one. Yeah.
Evan, I got one question for you. Sacramento Republic announces an MLS team. When are we getting the book?
That's a good question. I mean, it's like 80% done. I just have to actually figure out what's happened over the last couple of years because no one really knows. But I think once this announcement comes, which I guess by the time everyone's listening to this, it already will have come, then I have to start figuring out, you know, all the latest details, because I have the inception and first couple of years down. I just really don't know what happened between then and them getting an MLS team in terms of the specifics. So once I figure that out, I'll let you guys know.
All right, Evan, go throw on some Papa Roach. Get down to it. Right? Best band.
That's Vacaville.
Oh, my bad.
Wow.
Whatever, you know.
Pavement is
Sacramento,
right?
What an idiot.
Thinking Papa Roach came from Sacramento.
Vacaville guy over here.
I know. Seriously.
Maybe he loves Cowtown.
Bobby's just bitter right now because he's like, only one book gets flogged on this show.
We haven't even had that book flogged
on this
show.
You know what, Bobby?
So waiting for that.
The dream became reality for Sacramento Republic.
Oh,
I'm just saying. Evan, thank you so much for joining us, man. You can follow his work at the Davis Enterprise or on Twitter. Evan Ream, R-E-A-M. Enjoy this announcement, man. It's been a long time coming.
All right. Thanks, guys. Have a good one.
All right, big thanks to Evan Ream. Thanks to these guys. Hope you have enjoyed the Audi 2019 MLS Cup playoffs. We absolutely have. Wednesday and Thursday, MLS Match Day Central pregame and postgame shows. Tune in on Twitter at MLS. Hit us up for the mailbag.
Brown Liquor Special.
Oh, Thursday night. We're staying up late to do that for you. So look on Thursday evening for the podcast. A little later than we normally do it. Let's get out of here.
Not late for you because you're a Sacramento.
Exactly. Listen to the call up. They're coming after us. We'll see you later, everybody. We'll be right back.